Live and Lansing with Michael Cohen. This is More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
We are back. Michael Cohen with producer Desi Simmons. The Occupy movement, it started on Wall Street and now has spread all over the country, including right here in Lansing. But is the entire idea of rich versus poor a valid one? To talk about that, I'm joined by Paul McGuire, who spent more than 20 years as a trader at the New York Stock Exchange before pursuing his career as an author. His book, Professor Atlas and the Summoning Dagger, is the first in a series of children's books. Welcome to the program, Paul.
Thank you, Michael. Good evening.
Now, I want to ask you off the bat, when you see this Occupy Wall Street movement, which has now, of course, spread all over the place, having worked on Wall Street for so long, do you view this 99% versus 1% argument as valid, or is this essentially class warfare?
Well, first of all, I think the percentages, of course, numbers like that are always open to debate. And as far as class warfare goes, you know, I think the idea of some of the protesters is to sort of narrow the gap a little bit, but I think that gap could be narrowing on its own and to many people's chagrin or many other people's delight. My view of the movement itself is I see these people down in Zuccotti Park, and they appear to me as just a real manifestation of some widespread discontent that we see throughout our country. And, you know, they're not there because they have nothing else to do. They really have a statement they'd like to make. While I was making a living on the floor of the stock exchange, of course, if we passed by any grouping of people like that, you know, I mean, there was a whole range of feelings that any person would feel, maybe sometimes a little sympathy, but often just a little, you know, people would get a little annoyed or unhappy that it's all going on there. But,
sure. But I was going to say, having worked at the stock exchange, I mean, you must have seen all kinds of circumstances, some winners, some losers. I mean, does that argument that there's a ruling class that rules over the rest of us, is that really the case, or is the reality much more complicated from your view on the inside?
I'd certainly agree with the latter. I think the reality is much more complicated. I think the personification of there being a ruling class is a bit on the extreme side. And, you know, I think with my position right now, I have the benefit of being able to view it both sides of the coin. Inside the walls of the New York Stock Exchange, there are people there who are equally discontent, people who have taken pay cuts and they're holding on to the jobs that they have only because there's nothing else that's better out there. And it's just tough times for a lot of people on both sides of this discussion, and that might be hard to swallow for some. But the fact of the matter is that, yeah, I do think it's a bit of an extreme characterization. And again, people are upset, and rightly so. There are cases where some of these larger banks knew that they were creating these mortgages that people wouldn't be able to pay off. Mm-hmm. They knew that it would be time to pay the failure eventually. And what happened starting around 2008 or so, you know, the smart people who put these things together, they did know, they had to have known that this was all going to come, it was going to come to roost like that. And it did. And some people got very wealthy off of it, and others got homeless. And that's, you know, that's a terrible injustice, and of course, nobody likes to see anything like that.
And putting aside that situation, when it comes to our major financial hubs like Wall Street, is there anything innately dishonest or corrupt about it, or is it really the best system that the free market has created?
Well, Michael, as you mentioned earlier, I was down there for over 20 years, and the phrase that always presided over the New York Stock Exchange, particularly when it was populated by a lot of human beings rather than a lot of computers, but the phrase that you heard a lot was, your word is your bond. And there might be a bit of a tainted perception of the individuals who work down there, but there is the first thing they tell you when you start working on the trading floor is, don't be dishonest, don't try to pull the wool over anyone's eyes, because they will remember you can do 1,000 good things, and then you try to cheat someone like that, and they will remember you for that one bad thing. And, you know, it was a very valuable lesson. You know, good traders and bad traders, they all came out about even as long as they were honest. So My experience really is within the walls of the New York Stock Exchange. As far as Wall Street as a greater entity, a little bit of it is actually a bit of a mystery to me as well. What goes on in the upstairs trading desks, mm-hmm. of course, we can read some of these books that come out by people who had spent time on the trading desks. My experience on the trading floor itself was generally pretty positive. But again, I go down there nowadays for an occasional visit to see some friends, and it's almost like a ghost town down there, and that's upsetting for someone like me.
I see, because it's essentially become computerized now.
That's absolutely it. And it's sort of, it cut back on the profit for a lot of folks, but for me, more importantly, it made my job as a flesh and blood. What I did was I used to put buyers and sellers together. I was a market maker. I was becoming less and less relevant, and it was really, there was basically nowhere for me to go. I was really good at something that is no longer useful for anyone. It's like that. The comparison is always like it's like being the best buggy whip maker in the world. It's great to have that, but no one needs you. So I went out and wrote a book.
I see. Yep, I'm talking to Paul McGuire. He spent more than 20 years at the New York Stock Exchange, and now is an author. His book, Professor Atlas and the Summoning Dagger, the first of a series of children's books. So I guess that somehow explains your decision to leave the NYSE. Are there any regrets or any perspectives you have now that you're off the floor and away from all the action?
Yeah, well, I do miss it to some extent. But at the same time, seeing what's going on in Zuccotti Park and seeing that the whole downtown area is sort of surrounded by an aura of just bad vibes and miscontent. I'm sort of happy to be missing that part of it. And what I'm doing now, I find it very enjoyable, very therapeutic, and hopefully this is something that'll take off.
Mm-hmm. Well, the interesting thing about the Occupy movement is it seems to declare that these folks are not necessarily going to work for it, but rather they would like to have things almost handed to them. I mean, is that any way to effectively approach the type of change they're calling for?
Well, I think one great criticism of the movement itself and probably their biggest weakness is they have a very deliberate lack of leadership, and they're making it a point to just sort of say, this is our thing, and we're not gonna have any leader. We're speaking as one. Now, I walked past there a couple weeks ago, and within Zuccotti Park, there were people carrying signs saying, shut down the nuclear plants, legalize marijuana. In other words, there are people coming in and piggybacking off their cause, and I think that dilutes the message. I think they would benefit from a unified voice, and I think what they should be perhaps asking for is changes in the tax code, for instance, where large corporations wouldn't be able to make piles and piles of money and not pay a dime in taxes, which is an issue that's really becoming more to the forefront. The thing mm-hmm. with the big banks, I think that's already under scrutiny, and I believe Uncle Sam is on it, and I hope Uncle Sam's on it. It's going to be necessary. I hope it's all taken care of before we're desperate.
Now, I know when it comes to the stock market, Wall Street, and the whole world of finances, it now is drawing some of our brightest minds in the country. Do you have any advice for someone that's interested in getting into Wall Street at this point? Is that something worth pursuing?
I'd say the first thing you should do is buy a copy of Professor Atlas and the Summoning Dagger. Sorry, I had to get that plug in there.
Well, I'll ask you about that. Go ahead.
Sure. I'm sorry, Michael. Well, for now, I'd say tread lightly, and it's really difficult in the sense that there's no one really rolling out the red carpet. No one's hiring, and there are no fewer people who are interested in getting in it. I mean, this is an industry that once was quite lucrative, and there's a fair amount of camaraderie. I always saw it as a great place to be. I enjoyed every minute of my 20 years there. Mm-hmm. My advice would be sort of hang out in the perimeter for a while and take what you can get. If somebody is really determined to work within that industry, what I think they need to do is take whatever is available, even if it's much lesser pay than they can be expected, than they had hoped for, actually. And then learn the business and then try to get your way in. Whatever you learn in the classroom, a fair amount of it might be applicable to what's mm-hmm. going to go on in a real-life situation, but there's nothing beats hands-on experience.
That's certainly
Unfortunately, the high-paying jobs are not really out there. I mean, people are getting laid off. not hired.
I see. Well, it sounds like good advice for almost really any industry. So give me about a minute or so left. Tell me about Professor Atlas and the Summoning Dagger and the entire series. What is that book about and the series about?
Well, very quickly, it was my son Andy one night was asking for a bedtime story. He wanted to challenge me, and he asked me for an Indiana Jones story with knights and castles in it. Well, I started this narrative, and I was giving him what he had asked for, but it turned out that it took me several months to tell the story. I kept having to continue it, but eventually watching his reaction to this story, I was really thinking, boy, I've got to write this stuff down sometime. And I did write it down, and what resulted was a nice little story that I've been getting some great feedback from 8 to 14-year-olds, and of course my son Andy is probably the biggest fan of the book. But it naturally lends itself. The characters in this, it's the whole idea is this is, I want to subtly promote good values of honesty and integrity, mm-hmm. loyalty. And so the book is, it's, you know, clean, nonviolent, but hopefully enough action and excitement to get kids reading. And that's the other important thing, because I'm really learning a lot about literacy. And if you give a kid something that they're going to be interested in reading, they're going to become a good reader, and I've seen it happen hundreds of times, and you know, I think I've written a book that will lend itself to that.
Yep, well, I think many of us would probably be better off doing a little more reading nowadays. Paul McGuire, 20 years as a trader at the NYSE, now an author. His book, Professor Atlas and the Summoning Dagger, the first of a series of children's books. Thank you very much for joining me, Paul.
Thank you for having me, Michael.